各位观众大家好，我是卡拉，欢迎收看美国观察。美国又一个国会代表团周日落地台湾进行访问。另外，华尔街日报引述消息人士称，拜登总统与习近平可能于11月在东南亚会晤。今天的节目中，专家来解读拜登政府的中国战略。美国国会议员代表团于周日抵达台湾，进行为期两天的访问。星期一，代表团与蔡英文总统会面。这是佩洛西议长访台之后，台湾与中国大陆持续军事紧张局势之际，美国政府高层代表团再次到台湾访问。台湾外交部星期六发表声明，对美国在台海局势高度紧张之际采取具体步骤维护该地区的安全表示诚挚感谢。白宫国安会印太事务协调员科尔特·坎贝尔一天前强调，美国将继续以冷静和坚决的方式支持台湾，包括在未来数周在台湾海峡等地方执行海空军自由航行任务。美国还将宣布一项推动美台经贸协商的路径图。台湾外交部的声明说，对于美国政府在台海形势升高之际坚定支持我国，多次声援民众台湾，并以具体行动维护台海安全与区域和平，外交部表示诚挚感谢。乌克兰总统泽连斯基在周六晚间的讲话中警告说，像扎波罗热这个欧洲最大的核电站炮击，或以核电站作为掩护对外炮击的俄罗斯士兵，将成为乌克兰情报人员、特种部队和军队的特别目标。路透社报道说，泽连斯基没有说明详情，但是强调他认为俄罗斯在利用扎波罗热核电站作为核讹诈。俄罗斯部队在入侵乌克兰的战争初期占领了这个位于乌克兰南部的核电站，但是乌克兰技术人员仍在管理。联合国秘书长古铁雷斯因为担心这些炮击可能触发核灾难，呼吁在核电站周围设立一个非军事区。俄罗斯和乌克兰相互指责对方为最新的炮击负责。一艘中国考察船将获准在斯里兰卡港口停靠。此前显然是由于印度方面的担忧，远望五号测量船停靠斯里兰卡港口的时间被推迟了几天。斯里兰卡外交部周六在一份声明中说，原定于上周四在斯里兰卡南部汉班托达港停靠的远望五号将于周二抵达，并在那里停泊到8月22日。斯里兰卡没有给出推迟该船抵达的具体原因，但邻国印度对这艘中国船靠近其南部边界的安全担忧可能是原因之一。星期五，印度否认他向斯里兰卡施压，要求斯里兰卡让这艘中国船离开的说法。美国五角大楼说，远望号隶属中国人民解放军战略支援部队。中国外交部周一表示，敦促有关方面理性看待中国海洋科考活动，停止干扰中斯正常交往合作。美国和平研究所资深中国研究专家傅瑞珍对美国之音表示，拜登总统的中国战略仍然具有特朗普政府政策的很多特征，而从总体的外交战略上来讲，拜登总统一直试图安抚区域和世界各地的伙伴关系，承诺和确保在应对中国时的立场有一定程度的一致性， 傅瑞镇认为，美中之间目前信息流动的确有限，双方存在着发生很多误解和沟通不畅的可能性。来看详细内容。
Let me start with President Biden's China strategy so far. In your opinion, is it still basically along the lines the Trump administration had established?
I think that it has a lot of features of the Trump administration's policy. Certainly, most notably, of course, the tariffs that were put in place by the Trump administration persist, and there are no immediate plans to change those, although there is some buzz in the air about revisiting those. But in other respects, the Biden administration's policy is quite different, mainly in its focus on working with allies and partners to strengthen U.S. Commitments and relations around the region and around the world, with a focus on ensuring that there is a degree of alignment in the positions on China of the United States and U.S. allies and partners. And also, of course, in the focus that the Biden administration has placed on human rights issues, which includes concerns about Xinjiang in particular and Hong Kong.
So in terms of the non-Trump things, what kind of things has the Biden administration done so far most effectively, if you like, when dealing with China's challenges, for example, AUKUS or Quad or anything like that?
Yes, the Biden administration has packaged its diplomatic initiatives in a much more coherent version of the Indo-Pacific strategy that has included a couple of key pillars, including, as you just mentioned, AUKUS, an agreement amongst the U.S., Japan, and Australia, and also has strengthened the Quad and given it some institutional characteristics. And so you have regular meetings now among the Quad members. And so those are important features. In addition, the Biden administration has linked other key U.S. allies and partners into these initiatives. So we now see South Korea discussing the degree to which it wants to become a member of some of these initiatives. And then although the Trump administration abandoned the TPP, now CPTPP, this economic initiative that the Obama administration had worked hard to push forward in the region to provide a new, more advanced trade partnership amongst the U.S. and key economies in the region. The Biden administration has, although it hasn't been able to rejoin or take any initiative in that direction, the CPTPP, it has come up with something that a new economic partnership that it for the region as part of its Indo-Pacific strategy that has won considerable interest across the region. So those are some of the features of the Biden administration's regional diplomacy that have been quite distinct from Biden's predecessor, the Trump administration.
Aside from what you just mentioned, at this point, what are in need the most to be done?
So I think President Biden is facing increasing tensions with China. The relationship is, I think, extremely fraught and risky, partly because the two sides have not had, although there have been efforts to engage diplomatically in 2022, there have been the meetings between the two sides have been few and far between, and so there isn't that the kind of regular exchange of views between the two governments that the two sides had previously in the strategic and economic dialogues of the Obama era, for example. And so there is a really limited flow of information between the two sides. And so I think there's a lot of potential for misunderstanding and miscommunication. And then, of course, you have in the background the war on Ukraine, where the Biden administration has taken a very clear stance, obviously, in support of Ukraine. And China has positioned itself neutrally, but really strongly supportive of Russia. So in effect, the two sides are facing off against each other in some ways in this European theater. And then there are growing tensions over Taiwan, partly because they're exacerbated by the situation in Ukraine, as parallels are drawn between China's unwillingness to renounce the use of force in its effort to unify with Taiwan and U.S. interests in seeing a peaceful resolution to the Prostrates situation or the Taiwan issue, as it's sometimes called.
Mm-hmm. Now, these days, people are talking about guardrails between the United States and China. Are you seeing an immediate crisis that necessitates some kind of guardrail?
I think there could be a crisis. I think that we are supposed to be able to anticipate a meeting between Presidents Biden and Xi. And I hope that if that meeting takes place, that there is an effort, in addition to trying to find some other sources of ballast for the relationship, perhaps some sort of breakthrough on the economic front by lifting tariffs. That might be a possibility. But also that there are some assurances on the U.S. part about U.S. commitment to the status quo as the U.S. sees it on Taiwan. And one hopes some kind of agreement to be very cautious when flying planes and sending boats around so that there isn't an accident between the two sides in the region, that there was a near collision, that there isn't a collision that ends up catalyzing some kind of confrontation between the two militaries, which would be a real tragedy.
From Xi Jinping's perspective, before the 20th Communist Party Congress, which is very important for him, what would he expect for the U.S.-China relations?
I think President Xi, we are watching the Chinese economy do a nosedive right now, both as a result of the zero or dynamic COVID policies in China, and also for other reasons, crises in the housing market and other factors. And so President Xi faces a really difficult economic environment as he heads toward the 20th Party Congress. And so I think that on the one hand, that would argue for some improvement within China's relationship with the United States on the economic front. I think there is some space for the two sides to agree to that, to take some steps to open markets to each other. But on the other hand, I think we're going to see a continuing hard line on core interests like Taiwan, the South China Sea, Xinjiang, anything that touches on China's sovereignty and core goals of the Chinese Communist Party, such as achieving what the Chinese Communist Party sees as China's full territorial integrity.
We all know that President Xi Jinping is seeking a third term. So in order to seek the third term, probably he needs or he wants to burnish his credit. And in that regard, what does he need to do in terms of U.S.-China relations?
Yeah, that's a challenging question. I think you could argue in two directions. I'm sure that there is a careful cost-benefit analysis ongoing in the halls of Zhongnanhai, but I think generally speaking, I don't think it will serve President Xi well to be too warm and friendly to the United States, particularly as the war in Ukraine is ongoing. I think rather a hardline policy that falls short of provoking a confrontation with the United States would be ideal, where China looks strong, stands strong, continues to press forward on some of its new initiatives like the Global Security Initiative, the Global Development Initiative, and at the same time where there may be some improvements promised by President Xi through breakthroughs in some areas of the U.S.-China economic relationship, which could help boost growth, at least in some sectors, which could benefit China.
If President Xi were successful seeking his third term, I mean, are you worried about his unprecedented third term? I mean, people are talking about Xi Jinping is trying to build more of his, personal cult, around himself. And on the other hand, what are the challenges that President Xi is going to face in his third term?
You wonder why he would want the job. China is facing many challenges that certainly were not on the table when President Xi took the job a decade ago. I think there are a lot of concerns about having a leader for a period of 15 years through navigating China through tremendous changes. The challenges, as you said, the leader takes on a one could say almost a personality cult. And one of the directions of change that students of China had been observing after Deng Xiaoping initiated China's reforms was a greater and greater routinization of politics, political transitions from one leader to another, this regularization of sort of decade-long terms in office by Chinese leaders. It really suggests that there could be some political challenges to Xi Jinping, that the leadership is worried, the CCP is worried that opening the door to a political transition that would bring into power a new national leader, that could cause some sort of instability and not go smoothly. That's a big concern. So then you have President Xi, who has been essentially put China on a wartime footing with this zero COVID policy and these lockdowns, and has developed a whole new set of tools, of instruments to control Chinese society. That's really concerning. But you also have a system now that is obsessed with controlling the spread of COVID that it isn't giving the breathing room to the people the Chinese people who were so vital to driving a dynamic, highly entrepreneurial, creative economy that captured the global imagination for decades. So it is a big concern.
Let's talk a little bit about U.S. domestic politics. The U.S. midterm election will happen probably right after China's 20th Party Congress. Is U.S.-China relation or China topic an important factor in the midterm election here in the United States?
I think China will be an important factor because, it is a little bit concerning if you are someone like me who thinks that it will be beneficial if we can tamp down some of the tension between the U.S. and China. On the U.S. side, I think there'll be to some degree a competition between candidates on who can get toughest, who can be toughest on China. China continues to be or sort of managing China or competing with China. Facing off China continues to be an issue that is shared across the aisle, and we've seen a number of new pieces of legislation either being passed or in the process of being passed that will strengthen controls on U.S. Economic activity with respect to China, and also boost spending directly toward competing with China. So I think we're going to see a midterm election where China is a big topic. I also might mention the recent Pew poll that shows that U.S. Public opinion about China is extremely negative and unprecedentedly negative. So it looks like being tough on China is a winning issue.
What are your expectations for the U.S. midterm elections? Like many people say that in this forthcoming midterm election, the Democrats would probably lose control both in the House and perhaps in the Senate. If that happens, will the result have impact on United States China policy?
Yes, I think it's going to make it more difficult for the Biden administration to send the kinds of reassurances on cross-strait issues that it has been doing, despite some, I think, perhaps comments by President Biden that are aimed at deterring military action by China. I refer to his comments on a number of occasions that the United States would go to Taiwan's defense in the event of military action by China. But I think that's quickly been walked back by the administration, and which has sought to reassure Beijing that the U.S. policy hasn't changed and that we still respect the foundation of the U.S.-China relationship in the three communiques, and we continue to we do not support Taiwan independence, et cetera, et cetera. I think with a Republican-controlled House and Senate, it's going to be more difficult for the administration to manage Taiwan policy. I think there'll be a push to think about Taiwan in more strategic ways. And that, I think, will make the U.S.-China relationship all the more difficult.
Finally, let's talk a little bit about Russia's aggression of Ukraine. The United States has been asking China to help press Russia to end the war. So far, what has China done to solve the crisis?
China initially offered to play a mediating role, and it has offered some humanitarian assistance to Ukraine. It has also largely refrained from supporting Russia within the within the United Nations on Ukraine. I think has not supported UN resolutions that not voted with Russia on UN resolutions on Ukraine for the most part. But overall, I think its role in bringing and in helping to bring an end to this conflict has disappointed many people in that it has really stayed outside the conflict and instead has lobbied for a new security architecture that would create conditions, it argues, for a global environment less prone to these kinds of confrontations. Meanwhile, the war rages on in Ukraine, and it has not blamed Russia. Rather, it has taken a position that's been largely supportive of Moscow. The only thing it's criticized is the violation of Ukraine's sovereignty, and so. It's really not the performance of a world leader who would manage would help manage bringing about an end to a conflict. Rather, honestly, it has been quite an opportunistic kind of response to this tragic conflict.
If Russia loses the war in Ukraine. Do you think China will face a worse international environment? And if that happens, are you seeing a world that's divided between two groups, U.S. and its democratic allies and China, Russia and their allies?
Yeah, I think that we are moving in a direction where there'll be a very, very close China-Russia partnership, at least for the medium term. I think the people who study Russia are question just how durable a Beijing-Moscow partnership would be. But I think we will see, and you're already seeing this to some extent with an alignment with other rising and emerging powers joining China and Russia in international affairs and also some supporting Russia in the conflict. I refer to Iran and its alleged or I think planned provision of drones to Russia. So I think we're going to see a world where there is a clearer division, the other possibility, of course, is that Russia doesn't lose, but there is a settlement in which, because of Russia's ultimate military performance, there is an agreement that results that leaves Russia in a reasonably strong position. And that's an interesting situation to ponder. At that point, what does China do? Does China then look to the West again? Europe is clearly interested in maintaining relations with China, although perhaps a bit more at arm's length than in the past. And it may be that then China pivots toward Europe and that will be a very different kind of world than one in which China is more aligned with Russia and other partners that are right now outside the U.S.-led group of partners and allies and friends.
好的，以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容。感谢您的收看，我们明天再见。